you think about the corrosion on a battery, there is something good and of value and useful underneath this corrosion. And that's what the image of God has become in our sinfulness, is it's been damaged, but it's not gone. It's not destroyed, and it hasn't turned to something demonic. To be totally depraved means that we need help. And isn't that true?
It is, yes.
Like, yeah, I mean, how many different ways do we need help from one another and certainly from God, you know?
Right.
Welcome to Faith Refresh, where we take another look at the Bible passages, beliefs, and other church stuff you've probably heard a million times and find something fresh.
Hello and welcome back to Faith Refresh. This is episode 17. I am Anson, joined by Justin. How are you today, Justin?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
Good. Well, hopefully you'll remain that way.
Okay.
After our 30-minute discussion that we're about to have on dun dun dun. I feel like there needs to be like a
very dramatic
mm-hmm. music drop there. We're talking about sin today on the show. Everybody's favorite topic, right? No, but wait, please don't tune out.
That's
just
right.
Yet.
Stay tuned.
We're hopeful that this is going to be a very hopeful conversation.
Yeah.
You know, I think we were partially, at least I was thinking about this topic because it's Easter season. There's the season of Lent leading up to Easter, which is a very somber time and a time in the church calendar where many Christians around the world are focused on our depravity. Mm-hmm. And so that might be one good reason to have this conversation. But another, just in broader terms, is that the doctrine of sin is incredibly important to the Christian belief system. And it also is often highly misunderstood or misapplied because it's complicated. One thing that I was thinking about as I was trying to decide how to approach this topic is a phrase that I just mentioned to you a few moments ago, Justin, that has become very popular in our modern cultural lexicon. And the phrase is, it's okay not to be okay.
Ah, yes.
There have literally been songs written with that title or with that as the chorus. I think this has really popped up in response to the mental health crisis that our country is dealing with. Most often it's said as an expression from one person to another of solidarity to let people know, hey, you're not alone. People struggle. And if you're struggling, you're one of us, right?
Yeah.
And that's okay. Like it's okay to struggle because we all struggle. And so often where struggle turns into something even deeper and darker is when we feel alone in that
Absolutely,
struggle.
Yeah.
So I think that's where the, I think, very good intentions of that phrase come from. And yet, as a Christian, I feel like I've often wrestled with this phrase. I think you can look at it from a number of different perspectives and go like, well, from this perspective, I think that makes a lot of sense. And and from this one, maybe it doesn't quite. And before you know it, you're all tripped up and not sure what to make of it. Just as a few examples, as Christians, we believe that there is this thing called original sin, right? From Adam and Eve, which we'll get into the fall and all of that in a moment, that all people are sinful. Right?
Yep.
God, I think, would say and does say in scripture, essentially, that's not okay.
Yeah. And I'm grateful.
there's something wrong with that.
Yes.
Right?
That's not okay.
Yeah. So in that sense, it's not okay to be not okay. But in another sense, we are all sinful, but there's hope. There's the good news of the gospel.
Yeah.
So maybe from that perspective, it is okay.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be maybe okay. You see how this could get complicated really, really quickly.
Yeah. And even the word okay is like,
how do you define that?
Yeah, what are we shooting for here? Like, is okay or, you know?
Right.
Yeah, what about good? You know, what about best? You know, those kinds of things come to mind. But yeah, I think that it's good intentions. We're in this together, and that's something that's important.
Yeah.
But there's also varying degrees of not okay. When do we look at a loved one and say, no, that's not okay.
Right.
And we can't stand for that. Say some kind of harmful action against them, you know, or maybe to themselves, or maybe the threat of that. I think of suicidal thoughts and ideations and where do we intervene, you know?
Right. We would say, you don't have to beat yourself up over where you are.
Exactly. Yeah.
But certainly no one would look at a person in that position and go, that's good. That's fine.
Yeah,
that's
we can't call not okay okay. We can't call wrong right.
Yeah.
We can't call something that's not good good. And so we do need to be careful with that. Yeah, we are all in this together. And that's part of the, you know, I guess you could say good news about the doctrine of sin is that we're in this together. We really are.
Yeah.
But we're not in this without hope. There's someone that can help, someone that can redeem and restore, and who wants to.
Okay, so that's interesting. You already kind of dropped the phrase good news.
Yes.
Right, which we know is a definition of gospel, right?
Yeah.
Like that's what the gospel is. It's good news. But one of the most famous verses, maybe second to like John 3:16, comes from Romans, right? Romans 3:23, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. If you've been in Christian circles at all, you're probably very familiar with that verse. I'll be honest, Justin, you read that verse, that doesn't sound like good news,
right?
So is this the bad news before the good news? Is this like a situation where when you go to the doctor and they're like, I got some bad news and I got some good news? Is that how we describe this?
Yeah, I've heard that really often. I get where it's coming from, that there's bad news before the good news. But in terms of like the good news about Jesus, the gospel, it's all the same news. And so I'm trying to lean into this and say, is there good news about sin? And I would say part of the good news in that verse is all. Just like we've been saying, we're all in this condition. We could talk about more specifics of how we experience it and feel it and know it deep inside.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've all fallen short of the glory of God. And so you think about the glory of God, now that's a pretty high standard. It doesn't get any higher than that.
Yeah.
And he's deserving of that from his creation. But I would also say, like, if we were to back off from that a little bit, my best intentions in any given day, I fall short of even that, you know? And so we fall short of our laws that we've agreed upon together, you know, in different nations and cities or whatever, you know, and there are consequences to that. And so even if we kind of drop the stakes down from the glory of God, I think at least when I look in the mirror, I see someone, I've fallen short of the mark in so many different ways.
Well, that's an interesting thought because I think this idea of perfection can definitely trip us up because if the standard of sinlessness is perfection, I think most people would admit, okay, nobody's perfect, right?
Yeah. And we're okay with saying that.
Right. But is there a difference between like, I didn't do the most optimal good thing in this particular situation and Hitler or put whatever you want in that spot? You know, like that's when you get people going, whoa. Like I can accept that you feel like I'm not perfect, but that's a big leap, right? To start comparing me to somebody like that. And that starts to make us really uncomfortable really, really quickly.
Yeah, there's a philosopher who's a Christian, last name Plantinga, that has a great quote, all sin is equally wrong, but not all equally bad. And so philosophers, they love like being really specific with terms.
Turns of phrase.
And so I kind of like translated it, we all miss the mark to a greater or lesser degree. And that's what he's trying to say is we can still fall short of the mark. And maybe the degree that I fall short is different than Stalin, for instance, historically. I think numerically, in terms of damage done, we could probably say. But our condition is the same. We're still both sinful. We've fallen short of the mark that God has set out. The other thing I would say about that glory of God is, of course, God is perfect. But part of the glory of God is his intentions for us. Like whenever he created us, what was his good intent? And we have fallen short of that in the biblical story. I love what C.S. Lewis talks about in terms of sin, that the pleasures of God that he has produced, that he has created, that we take in ways or in degrees which God has forbidden. So all of these things are essentially good in so many different ways, but we warp them, we tweak them, they fall short. Even if it's a small falling short, it's still tweaking it away from his good intentions. And anytime we get into that, something's distorted, something's corrupted in what God wants for us, what he calls good.
I think if we invited a smattering of different people into this room, and they came from a variety of different backgrounds, maybe even different religious backgrounds, we'd probably be able to have some very interesting philosophical conversations about, are people in general, is humanity more good than bad or more bad than good? How do you quantify these things? And do we distinguish between things like being wrong versus bad? And you could probably get a lot of different perspectives on that. But I wonder if one area where we could come to at least a general consensus might be something's not quite right.
Yes, yeah.
Right? I think most of us, like I said, would be willing to admit that personally, we're not perfect, but also probably that our world is not perfect in just a more general sense. As Christians, we have the creation and fall narrative in the book of Genesis.
Yep.
And so I'm wondering if you can bring us back to the book of Genesis here and give us a little bit of a survey, a lay of the land. What are we starting with before we jump into all of these questions about different types of sin and what do we do with this news and what is God doing about this?
A little context.
Right. Let's establish a little bit of context of, from the Christian perspective. How is all of this described in the book of Genesis? What's the setup?
Yeah. Just to kind of yes and amen what you just said, this whole not the way it's supposed to be is one of the best books about sin is, again, Cornelius Plantinga that I mentioned, a philosopher out of Notre Dame. One of the most like world-renowned Western philosophers that's alive today. And he's a Christian and openly works out of his worldview. That's the way he frames it. It's, man, this is just not the way it's supposed to be.
Something's not right.
Yeah. And I think that's a soul deep thing that we would be like, you know, like it's in me. Something's not the way it's supposed to be. And it's around me. It's in my relationships. It's in creation and like different things. And so
and that in turn kind of creates this longing, right?
Yes. For
things to be the way they're supposed to be, even if we're not sure what that is exactly.
Exactly. And so even in that, I think what we're saying is, that's sinfulness. We might think of like this very direct immoral choice, and that's certainly sinful as well. But this condition of this longing that something is wrong and needs to be put right is that sinfulness at work
that's
crying out.
We get these like utopian ideals and people have long tried to come up with the solution to this problem.
Yeah, what is
it?
Yeah.
Like, how do we fix this? How do we create a situation or an environment or a culture where things are the way they're supposed to be.
And what do those things do? They fall short. It's like inevitable.
Right.
And so anyways, the backstory is God creates everything and he keeps on saying that it's good, that it's good. And then he creates Adam and Eve, the way a lot of theological books and articles put it. The way I like to put it is our first parents, Adam and Eve, when God creates them, he says it's very good. You know, everything's in its place. And that's that Hebrew idea and word, shalom. Everything in its rightful place. Here it is. But Adam and Eve fall. They choose not to trust God. They trust themselves. They fall into temptation to do the thing that God forbids in the garden, the whole eating from the tree that he says not to, the one tree that they weren't supposed to, right? Of all the bountiful things that they had around them, they go to this one tree that they're not supposed to. And I wish I could say that I'm different and so much better than they are, but I find myself doing the same thing again and again as well.
Which is a good point, because I think there are times, I remember having this thought, reading about the story of Adam and Eve growing up, of like, why'd they have to go ruin it for the rest of us, right? Like,
exactly.
This idea that maybe we would have done something different.
Yeah, and that's a good point, is that sin, there's so many different kind of words that are put to it in scripture, but one would be like, we could think of like fantasy novel, a curse. A curse that comes in and sweeps across the realm. There's tons of fantasy fiction and different things like that that have that premise.
Right.
Well, that's right here. Or a bit of pollution that goes into a river that goes into the ocean and affects, you know, the ecosystem. That actually happens in real life. And so sin is like that. Yeah, it broke in through eating from this fruit of this tree that seems so like, why is that a big deal? Well, it fell short of what God called them to. It broke this trust between them, this relationship between them. And through that, there is this corrosion that started leaking out into all creation. And it has to be dealt with, but it has to be dealt with from the inside out and totally in all creation. And so as humans, we were made in the image of God. We're like him, unlike the rest of the creation in so many different ways, to be fruitful and to multiply, to make the earth beneficial, to make beneficial things from the earth, to be loved by God, love each other as ourselves, all those different things. And we don't. There's something wrong. that's happened. And we have this sense, and the Bible puts language to this and gives us the history, the context, like you said. It didn't start with us. It's not only my fault, right? And that's really part of the good news to me of sin is, yes, I am sinful and I make sinful choices that have consequences and different things. And yet, I'm not the first one here. I came into this world and stuff was wrong.
Yeah.
You know, say my family of origin for generations, and you go all the way back to the fall of Adam and Eve, we've inherited so much sinfulness that affects us to this day.
Yeah.
Before we were even on the scene. And that's part of what we feel, that longing for things to be made right is, man, this is bigger than I am. This is beyond me. It's not my fault. And that's true to an extent. There are lots of things that are my fault,
right,
but not all of it.
Yeah.
You know, we have inherited so much.
Yeah, I feel like that's become a very big part of the conversation. There's been a lot of talk about systemic issues in our country.
Oh, yeah, that's a good connection.
About sins of generations past, and certainly around racism and slavery. This conversation is very vibrant. And
yeah, that's true.
Very, very strong opinions about this. And it seems like certainly with that issue, we could, and many people have debated the proportion of blame you want to assign to previous generations compared to current generations and so on.
But kind of like planting as difference of degree.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
And yet it seems to me like maybe we could find a little bit of common ground in saying at the very least, yeah, okay, we can disagree on the proportion of blame to assign to who, but it's probably fair to say there's enough blame to go around.
Yeah.
At least as more general sin is concerned.
As Christians, we have this category of original sin, which is not everyone's favorite.
Yeah.
But I'm like, yes, I've inherited things that are not right. Even like physically, we have genetic predispositions to certain things.
Yeah. Like, my cholesterol is sky high.
Yeah.
And it's no fault of my own.
No.
It's my dad's fault.
That's sin.
Well, or he would probably say it's his dad's fault.
And it'd go all the way back to Adam and Eve.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's how it goes. Like, there are certain things, even physically, that we inherit that are not right,
right,
that are not what God intended.
And yet, it's now my problem.
Yes.
Like, just because it's not my fault that my cholesterol,
what am I going to do about it?
300.
Totally.
I still have cholesterol of 300.
Yeah.
And something needs to be done because something's not right.
Yeah. Medication or whatever other interventions that you have.
Yeah. But I do think that's an important point, because there is a certain sense of like, okay, there's relief that comes from the idea that, it's not my fault. And yet that doesn't necessarily absolve me of the responsibility of figuring out what to do with it.
Yeah.
Now that it's here.
It's still here.
Yeah. And so there's this both and thing going on there of like, yes, I've inherited this problem, but I also have this problem.
Yeah.
Right.
And in the here and now.
Both of those things can be true at the same time.
In both of those things, we're not alone. We are all in this condition together, this human condition that we long for more, but we find that we've fallen short and we continue to fall short.
Even those of us who have been saved by God.
Yes.
We continue to find ourselves in this position as we are in the process of being sanctified and ultimately being redeemed, but we're not there yet, which I feel like is an important point too, because without that acknowledgement, we could weaponize this
absolutely
very quickly.
And it has been weaponized.
Right? Say like, well, all of you are in that group, but I'm not. And so I can stand up here on my pedestal on the street corner and yell at all of you about where you're headed or so on.
Yeah. We even weaponize it against ourselves in private. We can just absolutely beat ourselves up in terms of our sinfulness and different things like that. Like taking this example of the cholesterol, like it's just a genetic thing, but people have turned those things inside and really hurt themselves, you know, by weaponizing it against themselves. You know, I should be this, or why does this have to happen to me? Like all these different things that further and further isolates and makes the problem even worse than it would be if we weren't willing to say, hey, it's okay not to be okay in that sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I want to kind of name drop a theological term here.
Cool.
That I want to discuss. You may be familiar with this guy named Calvin, who has a few ideas that have kind of coalesced into this acronym that you may have heard. And this acronym is TULIP, right? And the first letter of TULIP stands for total depravity, which just sounds epic in scale, just saying it, right?
Yeah, I'm wondering if the listeners are still listening at this point.
No, hopefully we did not.
Can we check in?
Yeah, we need to check in. Yeah, you still there? Hang with us for just a second. Yep. Total depravity. Yeah. Total, how would you define that? I think like complete.
Complete is a great word.
Right? Yep. Depravity. Sinfulness.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Corruption would be a great synonym.
Yeah. So complete corruption.
Whoa.
That sounds intense.
Yeah.
Right? You said it was good news. It doesn't sound like good news. Right?
No, thank you.
Yeah. Yep. So I'm totally depraved. Again, like, what are you saying about me, Justin?
Yeah.
Right? People probably could respond pretty defensively to that.
Again, yeah.
Maybe it comes back to what you were talking about, the difference between equally wrong and equally bad.
Yeah.
Because you hear total depravity and you go like, wait, I feel like I'm Stalin again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or Hitler again.
Yeah.
And I thought we just covered that.
Right.
But now this core doctrine for a bunch of Christians, maybe some not very nice ones, who say, you know, you are this. Wow, that's harsh and accusatory. What do we do with that?
Yeah, those two words, total depravity. Mm-hmm. I think first, sometimes we could just kind of extrapolate all kinds of meaning from those. For whatever reason, the alarm bells go off.
Yeah.
It does not mean that we are as, quote, bad as we could be. Again, that's the notion of degrees.
Yeah.
And I've had so many conversations with people where, as we talk about things, say someone who's not a believer talking about spiritual things or life or whatever, at this point, a lot of times they will take offense.
Yeah.
Like, even at the idea. Like, I haven't called them anything. Okay, just to be clear. And somehow they feel or get the sense, so you're calling me a sinner. Basically, like, it's putting you down as less than.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a sinner. Like, you know, again, we're in this together.
Yeah.
But I get what it sounds like. But really, total depravity, again, is the technical term, just like so many different theological or whatever the discipline term is. You know, we got to look up the definitions and figure it out. But to be totally depraved is to be sinful in the sense that we cannot save ourselves.
Helpless.
Helpless. Hmm. You know, in Ephesians 1, I think we are dead in our trespasses and sin. And that is not to say that we are evil, that we are demonic, that we are less than human.
Mm.
That would be a heresy called utter depravity that has been dealt with in church history at different times. No, we're dead, and dead people can't make themselves alive again. We're helpless in that state. That's what that verse is trying to say.
Yeah.
And the good news is that help has come. That Jesus has come.
Yeah. Yeah. But there is a big difference between being lifeless and being an active agent of evil.
Evil, right. Yeah.
Just wholly evil.
Yeah, we're created good in the image of God, even very good.
Yeah.
What sin has done is corrupted. That's the word depraved is corrupted. You think about the corrosion on a battery. There is something good and of value and useful underneath this corrosion. And that's what the image of God has become in our sinfulness is it's been damaged, but it's not gone. It's not destroyed, and it hasn't turned to something demonic. It's not gone that far. What it's saying is to be totally depraved means that we need help.
Yeah.
And isn't that true?
It is, yes.
Like, I mean, how many different ways do we need help from one another and certainly from God, you know?
Right, yeah. And I've heard this idea that apart from God, there is no goodness in us, right? I think that's such an important distinction, though, the distinction that you're making. Yes, that is true. Like, apart from God, there is no good in us, but not because without God, we are this demonic entity.
Yes, yeah.
But because without God, there is no goodness.
There's just, no life. There's nothing.
It's
right.
It's just nothing.
Yeah.
Okay. So types of sin.
Okay.
There's this interesting like thing I feel like with the topic of sin, like you mentioned it a few moments ago, not all sin is equally bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. But then there becomes this temptation and there's this whole thing with like the history of the Catholic Church and indulgences and things. And like, could we like rank sins and say like, well, this sin is worse than that sin. And like, we could try to come up with this scoring system.
And I'll pray for you at this price. Unless you're dealing with this, it'll cost you this much.
And we could get into all of that. Yeah. But when I say like categories of sin, I'm really thinking a little bit more broadly than that, right? Not necessarily like a point system for different sins that you did to your siblings when you were younger or whatever.
Yeah.
But more in the sense of like sins that I have committed against others, sins that others have committed against me. There's this generational sin that we're talking about with Adam and Eve. How would we kind of break those categories of sin down?
Yeah, I think big picture, some of the couple words that come to mind is we are sinful by nature and by choice. But we can break that down a little bit further in the sense that we've inherited sin. We talked about generationally, but also even genetically, like this falling short of God's best in every part of life has been inherited, not only in my soul, but in my body as well.
And we see some examples of that in, in the Old Testament, even kind of referenced to as curses, like you were talking about earlier.
And you have big passages of repentance that not only repent for the here and now, but also the sins of our parents, our fathers, generations past. God, we're sorry for all this because that's what's landed us here. And we're sorry too, presently.
It's the story of the children of God all throughout the Old Testament is doing that over and over and over again.
But again, part of the good news of that is it's not my fault directly. Not everything is my fault directly. There's some remedy even in that naming of specific kinds of sin and sinfulness that can actually ease some of the burden that we feel that I've inherited some of these things from my parents and my parents' parents, and I could see some of these trends. Yes, I still have a responsibility right now with God's help to shift the trajectory of that. And then also I'm sinful in just my condition. So I've inherited certain things, but also my condition is sinful. So it's not just which, you know, is next to choose things that fall short of the glory. I fall short. I can't run away from it.
There is some personal responsibility.
Yeah, it's in my soul.
There,
it's in my bones. Like I fall short of the glory of God, and I can feel that even if I wouldn't name it that way. You know, until maybe now, there's something that's, it's just not the way it's supposed to be.
Going back to that, not the way it's supposed to be, or something's not right. There's something not right with me.
Yeah.
Personally.
And I would say part of the good news of that is we don't have to run away from that. If it's in all of us, we could name it. We don't have to minimize it, deny it. It just makes us sick, even in terms of mental health and different things.
Yeah. It's okay not to be okay in that sense.
In that sense.
For sure.
And to look at it, like, man, there's a longing. We fall short and we don't want to. So now what? Ultimately, to invite Jesus into that picture, of course. And then, of course, the choices that we make. I have sinned. I have, like, actively, directly missed the mark, you know?
Earlier today and yesterday and against that person in this situation.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I think that's probably the category that is hardest for me to grapple with. Sometimes I think it's a little easier because it feels a little more abstract or less personal to be like, yes, I am a sinner. I have sinned. Generically.
Right, yeah. Broadly speaking.
Right. Yep. But also very specifically, like I said, yesterday against that person. That's kind of a different level for me, at least personally. And I wonder if maybe different people and different personalities, we have a harder time grappling with some of these compared to others. That one for me, that's the one where I'm like, man, I really need that like time of confession each week at church to reflect on and specifically confess the ways in which I have sinned and to deal with those. Because if I do it in a more generic, I have sinned kind of way, I'm usually not getting to the heart of it. And usually that thing continues or it persists.
Yeah. And that's the good news of just coming to grips with I have sinned is the fact that I can take responsibility. And sometimes that's the last thing we want to do.
Yeah.
But it's what we need. Like, just like you said, to confess that, to put it out in the open, that's the main result of sin is that it separates. It separates us from God. It separates us from ourselves. It separates us from one another. It separates us from the relationship we're supposed to have with creation and everything that God has made. And so in that, if I can name and take responsibility for the specific thing in a relationship, guess what happens? It can be mended. Now, if I don't, if I vaguely say I'm kind of sorry, but really it was like kind of your fault too. And so, you know, if we do those kinds of things, it doesn't have the power, the healing power that it could if we would just squarely say, I have sinned, I'm taking responsibility for these things. And so there's actually a lot of empowerment in that in a strange way.
One other thing that we talked about before we started the episode is the fact that we've also been sinned against.
Yes.
Right? Like, not That's only so are we agents of sin, like you said, we're all in this together. Mm-hmm. And that means we've also probably been victimized
yes.
by sin. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of easy maybe to gloss over that of like, well, because I bear responsibility for my own personal sin and I am a sinner and there's this generational sin that I've inherited, all of that, mm-hmm. like that somehow means we need to gloss over the ways in which we've been harmed mm-hmm. by others because, well, we're all equally complicit and I can't complain about something that I've also been complicit in. Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes in certain situations, you are victimized by something that someone else has done to you. Completely through no fault of your own.
Absolutely.
And I think there probably ought to be some space to grieve that and to process mm-hmm. that, don't
yeah.
you think?
I think that for our time, our here and now, this category of sin is really important to emphasize and to think theologically and just as people who love other people, how does the good news of Jesus connect with someone who has been sinned against? It's so incredibly important. Because again, that's the fault of another. Yes, each person has their own sinfulness, their own sinful choices, but there are ways that sin affects us and wounds us from others or just from the sinfulness and brokenness of creation.
Yeah.
You know, things happen in nature and, you know, all kinds of things where there's an injustice to it. Mm. Part of the good news of Jesus is that he knows what it is to suffer. And to be wrongfully abused. He knows. Mm. Words, deeds, we look at the gospel narratives and his sufferings. If there's solidarity with anyone, it's with him.
Mm.
And he with us.
Yeah. And that makes all the difference, right?
Yeah.
Because you've done a great job, I feel like, in the course of our conversation today, validating the way that people feel about sin, right? Like this idea that it's not the way that it's supposed to be.
Yes,
like,
yeah.
Yes, you're right. And that is validating. But validation alone doesn't solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
If we're all not okay, and someone comes along and says, it's okay to feel that way because we all feel that way,
mm-hmm.
that kind of hits at that it's okay not to be okay problem.
Yeah.
Yes, we're all in it together.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're all in a sinking ship together
mm-hmm.
and it's still sinking, what good does being with each other mm-hmm. do? Maybe it's comforting slightly in the fact that like, well, okay, I can at least I'm not going to die alone. I'm going to die with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. But death is still yeah. coming. Right.
And
but that solidarity with Jesus, mm-hmm. that validation from him,
mm-hmm.
that's what
I'm with you.
That's what makes all the difference.
Yeah.
That's the difference between, as we talked about, life and death.
Mm-hmm. I would say in my experience as a counselor, in so many, especially when abuse is involved and things like that, there needs to be a safe place. And that's that kind of, it's okay not to be okay
yeah.
kind of thing. But what that person really needs is a place at different times to kick and scream, it's not okay.
Mm.
It's not okay.
Yeah.
Because that's the anger, that's the injustice that needs to come out. And not only that Jesus knows what it is to suffer at the hands of sinners. That's what the cross and everything that led up to it is about. He also promises to make things right, that justice will be served one way or another. That's part of the good news that we need to hear as people who have been harmed by sin.
Yeah.
And we all have that to one degree or another in our stories, and we need to hear that part of the good news of Jesus, I think.
Thanks for listening to Faith Refresh. You can find more Real FM pods and tons of other cool stuff on the Real FM app and at real.fm.
Faith Refresh is hosted by Justin Rusinowski and I'm Anson Beyer. If you enjoyed the show, please consider writing a review on your platform of choice. It will help others to discover the podcast and listen for themselves. Faith Refresh is a part of the Real FM Podcast Network, a ministry of John Brown University.